Local Focus.
Hello and welcome to today's edition of the Rural Focus podcast. What a show we've got lined up for you today. Very soon we're going to be chatting with a pastoralist from a station here in the Pilbara. The station is called Munda Station. It is a cattle station. It's around about 100k southwest of Port Hedland. And the pastoralist that we will be speaking to is Michael Thompson. Now, Tomo here is hoping, with a lot of others, to raise over $100 million to fight the federal government's planned phase out of live sheep exports. You're probably thinking, well, if he's on a cattle station, why is he thinking or trying to help out with the live sheep exports? Well, all that to be explained when we do catch up with Michael very soon this morning. But we thought we'd kick off today's show on a winning note, because last Thursday night here in WA, it was the AgriFutures Rural Women's Award. There were three excellent finalists from across regional WA. And the winner, well, the announcement went like this.
The AgriFutures Rural Women's Award winner 2023 for Western Australia is Michelle Moriarty.
Yeah, that was the big news last Thursday night. The AgriFutures Rural Women's Award winner, Michelle Moriarty from Eaton. Michelle's on the phone with me this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Congratulations there to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
So how did last Thursday night, how did it all go for you?
Look, it was an overwhelmingly incredible night. The award alumni were there and I had so much support and just such a great vibe to be a part of and around other people with such great energy.
So for those who don't know, Michelle, talk us through your project.
So my winning projects come under my service, Grief Connect, so the Widow Support Group project. So in 2018, my late partner, Nathan Johnston, died suddenly. I had a two-year-old and a six-year-old. And at that point in time, hadn't had any experience with complicated grief and trauma. And suddenly my world was turned upside down. So absolutely every aspect of my life was changed due to his death. We had so many exciting times ahead and everything crashed to the ground. So I felt very isolated and lonely. And that was despite having a lot of family, friends and community support. I still felt really isolated and lonely in my grief. I ended up catching up with another widowed person and realised at that catch up how important it was to be connected with other people who got it and who shared that same experience that I was going through. So I ended up starting a Facebook group with a membership of four. So there was four of us widowed people in that group at the start. And that was started basically for my own personal needs at that point in time.
Yeah.
And the peer support that happened in that group was so powerful. And the group ended up naturally evolving and growing. And our membership is currently at over 300 young widows across the state. And unfortunately, my father, Neville, died last year in September. And my mum's left a widow, similar to me. And I founded the Over 55s Widowed Support Group, again on Facebook, and another peer support group for the Over 55s age bracket, where people can connect with other people in the same circumstances.
So winning the award last Thursday, what has it meant for you now personally then?
Well, personally, it has just been... I'm so appreciative that people are talking about grief and acknowledging our grief experiences and giving widows a voice across Australia that, you know, we do have certain support needs as well. And quite often in our grief, it's very hard for us to reach out. But this award has given us a forum to start conversations about the widowed support groups and also hopefully address and bring some further services to us.
And I suppose too, Michelle, it brings a sense that people out there aren't alone when a loved one does pass away. There's many others in the same boat.
Well, this is exactly right. No one has to do grief alone. Mm. And if you're experiencing grief, please know you do not have to do this alone. There are so many others out there who are able to support or be a great connection to normalise the grief experience.
Over the next 12 months, where do you hope to take the project then now?
Look, you know, this is a peer support group. We're a Facebook group. I am a volunteer in these groups and I have two moderators who assist in these groups. But really, the going forward for the next year, I'm hoping to develop the groups into a more formalised service. So developing a business plan and looking at sustainable funding sources going forward and expanding on services such as creating more activities where we can promote physical and mental health. Because those activities then, you know, by reaching out and connecting people, we reduce social isolation and, again, increase positive mental health outcomes.
So, Michelle, has there been any unexpected personal rewards for you so far going on this journey?
One of the things that I've really noticed for myself is just that belief in myself and that encouragement that I've received from the award alumni and from the public in general. I've received so many messages and contacts of support and appreciation that grief is now a subject we're talking about due to this award.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now what, you head to Canberra later on as the WA winner?
Yeah, I'm so excited to go to the AgriFutures National Award.
Did you have a chat with last year's winner, a lady who's been on this show, Louise O'Neill? Did she give you some pretty good pointers?
Look, Louise is so inspirational. She's been a huge support to me, so positive and supportive of Grief Connect and the Widow Support Groups going forward.
Well, congratulations on being announced the AgriFutures WA Rural Women's Award winner last Thursday night. And going forward with your biz, good luck and all the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
The following interview on the Rural Focus podcast is a paid interview. A reminder, this may not be the right product for you and other goods and services may be available.
Well, this plate doesn't need an introduction on Rural Focus. The one, the only, Phil Brooks, Sales and Marketing Manager with the team there at Whitford. Good morning, mate.
Good morning, Troy. Thanks for letting me on the show. That's a pleasure.
always welcome you on the show, mate. Hey, with the grain harvest, it was a bit of a while ago, but for the grain growers, it was certainly one for the ages. What was your take on it?
Oh, I thought it was incredible for a lot of reasons, Troy. Certainly, there was you know, some areas that got too much rain, but generally most areas were above average. I think CBH took about 22 million tonnes of grain, and I think the on-farm storage was around 26 million for the state. So, look, it's amazing what rain can do, but also probably demonstrates the skill and the ability of these growers to get the best out of their crops. So, look, 2 years in a row of record years mean it's been remarkable and worth celebrating. I think it's even better that growers get the benefits of the yields and the price that were strong over that period. So, yeah, obviously I think that the challenge for the industry now is trying to execute the rest of that grain.
As we know, grain prices are historically strong also, and this must give the growers out there extra confidence going forward.
Yeah, definitely. Look, we've got wheat pretty similar to last year and then high 300s for APW around that mark and around 350 for ASW grades. You know, barley's around that sort of 320, 325 mark. So that look augurs really well. Obviously, canola's taken a bit of a hit with supply sort of coming back to a more normal and so that's come off. But generally, I think, you know, the prospects are reasonably good. While we've had inputs that have been very high, we've also seen urea half in price since November, so that's sort of going to be a major benefit for growers going down, you know, into this year.
Yeah, for sure. Now, our listeners out there will be aware of nitrogen prices. They've been on a bit of a wild ride since the start of the year. Have you got an update on where nitrogen prices are at the moment, mate?
Yeah, sure. Look, I suppose it's worth going back to sort of see why there's been such volatility in that market, and it's been incredibly difficult to trade. Sort of towards the end of last year, we had Russia limit supply on gas to Europe, and that meant, you know, gas prices rocketed up, and obviously because urea uses a lot of gas, this meant prices went well over the $1,500 per tonne mark, and the market sort of thought that was the new norm in a really quick period of time. We've had the US step in to supply gas to Europe at a subsidised prices, and that's increased the availability of gas in Europe. And I think that combined with one of the warmest winters on record in Europe meant there was an abundance of gas availability, and prices have dropped dramatically since. So, it's enabled manufacturers to restart, and obviously there's ample stocks now, and that's been affecting price.
Yeah, absolutely. So why haven't, say, the phosphates, Phil, come back to the same degree?
It's a good question, Troy, mainly because two-thirds of the phosphates come from either China or Russia, both who have restrictions out of these regions, meaning we aren't dealing with them. So the market doesn't have stockpiles of product readily available like we do as urea. So this has sort of meant the market has stayed relatively stable.
Wagyu Mularama a couple of weeks ago, mate. Feedback there? Many growers who have not locked in their fertiliser requirements going forward?
Yeah, it's been a different year. I think growers have had a longer harvest. They've probably been busy dealing with budgets and liming and a whole heap of other things to keep them busy. I suppose in perspective, in the past 3 years, we've had the Russian-Ukraine conflict. You know, we've had COVID issues affecting supply. This year, we just haven't had those drivers there affecting the supply. So also the fertiliser market has been softening. So the urgency to fix product wasn't there as it has been in previous years. There are a lot of growers uncommitted, but that's something they'll need to address in the next few weeks. And, you know, obviously we'd encourage them to get in contact with Whitfert to see what we can do with pricing and requirements.
And how have you and the team there at Whitfert's, mate, how have you handled the volatility during the period?
Oh, look, I think it's been a test for the whole Whitfert team dealing with these issues, you know, on price movements and product availability and shipping. The volatility, we've seen massive price swings and up and down. That's made it tough for suppliers like ourselves and for growers alike. But look, the Whitfert team really prides itself on giving growers up-to-date advice and keeping them informed of the market movements. So I think we can really hold our heads high. And I think, and importantly, regarding supply, you know, Whitfert has all the stocks ready in our fertiliser shed. So, you know, and we have delivered over the past couple of years. So, you know, I think that's an important, a really important quality that growers have benefited from. Hopefully we get some opening rains and it'll keep things going.
Let's hope so there. And in the high-priced environment out of the moment, mate, we know that prices here are going left, right and centre. Will growers, I'm sure, be looking for some source of credit? So is there any credit terms offered by you and the team there at Whitfert?
Yeah, certainly. We have both sort of 30-day and we've had deferred terms for growers looking at these options. So we have a really straightforward credit application process, which is easy to set up. So if growers are interested in seeking credit for now or for nitrogen in the middle of the year, then certainly give the Whitfert team a call.
Yeah, go ahead and do that. So there you go, growers. If you're yet to order your fertiliser or you use liquid nitrogen or urea for later on in the year, do yourself a favour. Give Phil and the team at Whitfert there a phone call today. 94199999. That's 94199999. Offering saving, supply and service, and have been doing so for over 30 years. That's with the team there at Whitfert. Phil, as always, mate, nice to chat, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Sounds good, Troy. Thanks for allowing me on the show.
Rural Focus on Triple M.
Well, of course, we have heard throughout the week that a pastoralist in our Pilbara, well, he's hoping to raise over $100 million to fight the federal government's planned phase out of the live sheep exports. His name is Michael Thompson. No, not the one from Nine News. This is the one from Munda Station. Tomo, good morning there to you, mate.
How you going, Troy?
Not too bad.
I wouldn't say I'm happy to raise $100 million. I'm sure there'd be a lot of people out there that could spend their money on other things other than fighting our federal government. No.
So, Tomo, how are you looking at trying to raise all this money?
Theory that anyone in Australia that owned a breeding cow, kick in $15 a breeding cow, and anyone who owns a breeding ewe, kick in $2. And it worked out with the numbers that I got off the MLA the other day, we could raise up to $300 million if everyone put in. And you know yourself, there's going to be a lot of sceptics out there that are going to say it won't achieve anything and all the rest of it. But if I've learned anything with governments, you've got to use the media and you've got to use lawyers, unfortunately, because that's the Western way. And as much as I've got better things to do in my life, and I just sick to death of, this government at the moment. Yep. But, it's the only way you can make them listen is when the media get involved and smart people get behind you and you take the emotion out of it and show them the facts and say, well, look, we've done everything that to keep live export going. What is the reasons behind this other than a minority group wanting it out of the Australian business agenda? here we are. We've got a Labor government once again got into power last time with the Green vote. They can never get into power on their own. They've got to use everyone else, and then comes the payback. And here's the payback. Payback to the Greens or whoever is behind it, a minority group that thinks that we don't do live export well. And look, we all love animals. You know, I've got my dog sitting alongside me in the car at the moment. I love animals. So don't think for a second that I want to see them killed inhumanely or slaughtered inhumanely. That's not on the agenda. I think we've got to prove to the Australian public that we're doing it well, we've evolved, and we continue to evolve to keep the trade open, because that farmers need, anyone who runs a business would understand, you need all your marketing options, and you take one out of the equation, this is huge in WA. You know, we're gonna see a loss to our bottom line, and it's tough times out there for farmers, whether people believe that or not. Tough for most Australians, and unless you're a miner, it's tough.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the response been like, mate?
Very good. Yep. Look, we've got a meeting on Monday afternoon. I've got to pick this fella up that I was involved in with another issue I had with our state government. I'm picking him up from the airport Monday. We've got a meeting with some of the big exporters in WA and pastoralists and some important people to find out how we're going to go about it, and then I guess how we're going to manage it to prove to the people that do want to, you know, farming communities in Australia, that we're real and we're going to do a good job and we're going to do the Australian people proud the way we go about it. Yeah.
Some listeners this morning might be thinking, mate, well, hold on, this bloke's on a cattle station. Why is he looking after wants to look after the live sheep exports? But you, as you say, you just want to look after what is right for going forward.
Well, I think it's all about, you know, look, I got badly hurt. Or our family did in 2011 when Labor government under Julia Gillard and Ludwig, who was the Minister for Agriculture, then banned live export in a week. We didn't have a market in the north. I mean, a lot of innocent people got badly hurt and went bankrupt over it. A lot of our land north of the 25th parallel was given away to overseas investors for a third of its price. I mean, the capital gains and stamp duty that the Australian public lost when the Labor government did it last time, I would have thought it would have been in the billions. It cost our country, and I just don't want to see it happen again. I want to see accountability in government when they make bad decisions. We've got to make them stand up and be counted. And that's I feel strongly about it. And I guess it always takes someone to start something off, and hopefully it snowballs and the Australian farming communities. Doesn't have to be farmers, it's anyone. It's going to affect us all that's involved in the country life that we're used to, and it's going to affect us all, whether it be a hairdresser, a truck driver, or, you know, schools in the country are battling to fill up seats now. We don't want to see any more students go, because that'll shut schools down. There's a list.
Yeah, absolutely.
People know how it affected them last time in the north. Well, and it does affect the whole of Australia, because it crashes the you know, a lot of our stock prices are based on the export market.
Yep.
And that's where we're geared to. If we take that out of the equation, we're just going to be giving our stock away, and there's going to be a lot of people get hurt, not only farmers, but communities as well.
Federal Labor also say that the live cattle trade won't go. What are you thinking here?
Well, that's why I want to fight it.
Yep.
Because I know they just tell lies, governments. Look at our super.
Absolutely.
I'd like to be one of the 80,000 that got hurt with their... But, you know...
Yeah.
I just don't like them changing rules, and I feel for the people that put their super in I do, and you do it because that's the law, and you work with accountants that are supposed to know all the laws, and then they go and change it on you. And this is just another example. I wouldn't believe a word Labor says. If they've got to stay in power because whatever makes them feel good about having the power, and they'll use whatever tools they need. If it's a popular vote with a minority group, they'll take cattle out as well. And rest assured, we're not insulated, and that's why I feel like let's get in and fight now at the early stage when we're all strong and get a united front. As a united front, we're not a minority group. Farmers aren't a minority group in Australia. We're a huge group of the community, and I think we need to stand side by side and show this government that we're not going to stand for bad policy.
So get behind this if you can. How can people get behind you here, mate?
Well, we'll work that out on Monday.
Okay.
You know, there's no point taking people off Monday, off people.
Mm.
If you can't, you know, you've got to have a paper trail. Do it properly so people can feel safe that what they're investing in, it's an insurance policy. That's how I see it. If you look at it over a 10-year term, with interest, it's not to how badly they hurt the North in 2011. This is nothing. This is a pittance to what I lost in 2011 for me to chip in $15 a head. But let's face it, Troy, we've got to prove to the Australian public we do it well, and we're one of the best exporters of livestock in the world.
Absolutely.
But we've got to convince the Australian public that we are the best in the world, and we'll continue to be the best, and they should be proud of what we do feeding the world. And that's what Australia do. We have an excess of feed. I'd love to interview some of these people that are in the Middle East that take our livestock and our sheep.
Yeah, so would I, actually.
Some of the average people that go shopping,
yep,
that like eating Australian mutton or beef and appreciate what we do to get it there. So I think we've just got to prove the Australian public and the sceptics out there that we do a great job and we're here to stay. And then hopefully the government gets the popular vote for them. It's against them. And if we can do that, well, they'll change the policy, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, we certainly do a brilliant job. And the supply chain behind the exports certainly do need our support. So get behind it if you can. Hey, Michael Thompson, mate, nice to chat. Good luck with that meeting on Monday. We'll try and catch up with you sometime next week, mate, and see how it all went for you.
Yeah, hopefully I can give your listeners a bit of an upside on where we're going to take it all, but we'll have a better idea on everyone's feelings on Monday. And I hope your listeners out there, because you've got country listeners,
yep,
know how important it is to country that we stand up. And unions stand up against the government, and they don't seem to care how badly they hurt our country. And it's about time the farmers stood up for their livelihoods, and the communities that support the farmers stood up. And we all stood up for our livelihoods and said to this government, enough's enough. And we've got a state election coming up, Troy.
Yep,
and
yep.
And I know that our Premier has backed live trade. So let him put his money where his mouth is. He might be the first one to put in a couple of mil for the fighting fund. And I hope that, you know, he doesn't get voted out for the country listeners. Because if he doesn't support it, I think we can teach him a lesson at the next state election, which would be good. Yeah,
it certainly will be. Yes, it'll be interesting to see which way now Mark McGowan is. He still going to stick with the live sheep? Of course, he and Jackie Jarvis, the WA Agriculture Minister, they're both for it to continue, but we'll just have to wait and see. Hey, mate, good luck with that meeting on Monday. We'll catch in with you hopefully next week.
Good on you, Troy. All the best.
Michael Thompson from Munda Station, pretty much putting his money where his mouth is, hoping to raise over $100 million to fight the federal government's planned phase out of live sheep exports. He's already been through this before, back in 2011 when the cattle live trade, and now that's been back up and running. So it'll be interesting with this meeting on Monday. We'll find out more, hopefully, from Michael Thompson sometime next week. But big thank you to all of our guests here all this week. Been a wonderful show all throughout the week. Don't forget too, if you have missed other little bits and pieces from the Rural Focus radio show, you might have missed our chat on Monday. Confidence up in the WA farming sector. That's always good. The cattle sales, well, they're still going A-OK across regional WA. And, well, the program for WA's biggest dairy conference, well, that was revealed just the other day. You can hear more on that right here on the Listener app, LISTNR. And just search for Rural Focus. Whatever you're getting on up to, have a wonderful day. I'm Troy Stockton, and I look forward to having your company again very soon, right here on the Rural Focus podcast.